What? I'm a gassy baby. Leclerc! 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 Ahoy hoy, and welcome to another episode of Let's Talk. I'm Sean Polidano, the secret ingredient to your favourite Aussie dish, fairy bread. Joining me as always is one saucy meat pie, Aaron Best.
I should probably start letting you write your own intros.
No. How are you doing today?
I'm excited for today. We have a brand new tech set up here in the studio, so all of our listeners will be able to hear perfectly just how much the cold I have is kicking my ass.
Yeah, well done on making it here today, but don't worry, I'm here to carry the team. So this weekend has been very special. Your new favourite gay podcasters were trackside at the Australian Grand Prix, sitting in the centre stand. We and our amazing Let's Talk mates cheered, screamed and partied at Albert Park.
It was such a great weekend, experiencing some of the best of international and local motorsport, with the Formula One being supported by Formula 2 and 3, as well as the Porsche Carrera Cup and the quintessentially Australian V8 supercars.
In the lead up to the GP, I also attended a super interesting and candid Gunther Steiner talk at the Playhouse Theatre. It was refreshing to see that he is as genuine as he is portrayed in Drive to Survive. This granted us first-hand access into his relationship with Gene Haas. We both then got to visit the Victorian Pride Centre for the fabulous Pride in Motorsport AusGP event, hosted by Racing Pride and Proud to Play. Proud to Play is an Australian organisation committed to creating a world where all LGBTIQA+ people can engage in sport without fear or discrimination. I've personally worked with them in my past through the Glamourhead Sharks swim team, and I'm excited to see them working with Motorsports Australia.
Racing Pride is an international member organisation committed to inclusivity in all areas of the motorsport industry around the world. This year, Racing Pride, along with Proud to Play and Motorsports Australia, brought the world's first Pride Hub to the Australian Grand Prix. The Pride Hub celebrates LGBTIQA+ individuals in the motorsports industry and provides a dedicated space for the community at the Formula One.
It was fantastic to see the Pride Hub in prime position at the circuit, and I loved taking my dad there and sharing it with people in this room. It was an amazing experience to see that. Volunteers at the Pride Hub said how amazing the reception has been to the stand and what it means for the future of diversity, not only for the industry, but for fans as well. But now, without further ado, I'd like to introduce you to our very special guest for today. This week's racemate is an English expat bringing her unique Cornwall sass to the world of Melbourne nursing. She is one of the biggest Hamilton fans I know, having messaged him on Instagram to inspire her next tattoo. She loves Formula One so much that she also wrote an assignment about how excited she was for the 2008 season. She has attended the AusGP with Aaron and I for the last 2 years running, making friends with random fans at every opportunity, and even convincing owners of Legends Lane to let her sit in historic cars worth more than $2 million. I'm cracking a can of her favourite Monster Energy to celebrate her joining us here at 8 a.m.
Oh. It's better than sex.
Oh, that was brilliant. Please welcome to the Let's Talk Garage, Judy!
How's it going, everyone?
Yee-hee!
Yee-haw! Thank you, darling.
Aaron and I are so excited to have you on the pod. Like with Ryan, our time at the gym with you seems to always revolve around the week's race. How did you get into the sport?
So my dad has always been a huge Formula One and motorsport fan.
Yep.
Always loved Formula One. He's loved the MotoGP. And Sundays in the UK are very big on relaxing and chilling out. You've got your Sunday roast. You have your fire on. You have a classic Harry Potter film. But for us, it was always Formula One, to my mum's dismay. So as a result, one day I forced myself to watch a race with Dad, annoyed him the whole way through, asking questions. What's DRS? Why are they changing tyres? I think by the end of it, he was done. But I persevered and I fell in love with the sport.
I love that. Again, that family connection being passed down by dad is that kind of common thread, isn't it?
It's a common thread. Most of our guests have said that their dad was watching the sport and that's how they got into it. I think I'm the only one who didn't have my dad watched the supercars, not F1.
Yeah, which is kind of the same, but it's very interesting to see that kind of previous generation passing it down. I also love that you made it sound so magical of a Sunday in terms of the roast, the fire maybe on. Very English of you.
Very English, very English. And shout out to you, Dad, Papa Litchauer. Honestly, he just invoked my love for it. And I think, you know, I never did Silverstone. Mm-hmm. Dad had always said to me, overrated track. You pay a lot of money for seats at Silverstone, and actually you can go away on a holiday and see a lot more exciting and better, you know, racetracks for less. So never went to Silverstone.
Well, we must be lucky for the fact that all three of us, plus my dad, attended the Oz GP in 2023 and again this year. The third of us four after the race on Pitt Straight takes pride of place on my wall. What was it like for you to then be in the Senna stand this year, two times in a row?
Just amazing. I think Senna is an icon, you know, in the racing world, and Dad would always talk about him to me. And I think actually being able to say, oh, I was sitting in Senna stand, although being surrounded by McLaren fans both times was the only struggle. But Lewis was once a driver for McLaren, so...
Yeah, show a little bit of love and support for them.
A little bit of love and support for them, absolutely. I was outnumbered, in fairness.
You did also manage to convince an entire crowd of McLaren fans last year to start cheering for Lewis in that final lap.
And you succeeded.
I mean, the fact that he didn't win was upsetting. If it hadn't have been the third restart, I reckon he'd have had it.
I also think that you have to look at this and say, I went to the most chaotic event last year. And again, you got to event experience even this year's one, which was a little bit chaotic and yeah. You did not know where it was going to go.
Well, do you know what? The first time I saw a Formula One here was back in 2022, and Max Verstappen didn't finish that race either. He had a crash. So actually both times that Max has not finished has been at the Australian Grand Prix.
Well, maybe it's a Jody thing.
It's a Jody thing. And last year I wore my Mercedes outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Lewis became, you know, podium, got second. And this year, because I feel like I betrayed him this year, because I wore Ferrari, although I'm wearing it in prep for him for next year, he did not finish. So I actually think I am the lucky charm at the Australian GP.
So let's paint a bit of a picture about our Sunday morning. We came together at my place to celebrate the Grand Prix. Wonderful breakfast cooked by Aaron. Now, you came in stressing that you had lost your Merc hat.
Yes.
Right? You know, being a fantastic Ferrari ambassador that I am, I graciously gave you my Ferrari red cap. How'd it feel wearing red this year?
Do you know what? I always thought red wasn't my colour. I've been proven wrong. I actually think it could be the new thing for me.
Red caps, red dresses, red everything.
Tick, tick, tick.
The grid girl outfit that you had going was just perfect.
Do you know what? Every year you've got to put on a show, put on an outfit, you know. Last year I was in the checkered flag pants and it was iconic because we made it onto the track.
Yep.
Checkered flag. This year obviously was the race grid girl. I just needed the monster sign and I'd have been the monster energy girl.
I think maybe a sponsorship deal could be in the works, really.
Hashtag release the beast.
Yeah. Now, on the topic of your love of Hamilton and now wearing red, what did you send to him about this tattoo?
So I want a new tattoo and I've got no, other than the Godspeed on the back of my arm, I've got no writing. So one of my favourite Lewis Hamilton quotes, we all know he's inspirational, the way he talks, you know, oh, perfect. One of his favourite things he says is still we rise. I just think perfect. I'm going to get it on my ribs. So I sent him a big paragraph asking him to, to write it down for me so I could take it to the tattoo shop. And said it really resonated with me. You know, I gave it the spiel. I gave it a good crack. And the worst thing is I've been left undelivered.
Oh, no.
Been left undelivered. But I am thinking I'll send him an apology for not wearing a Merc hat this year because, you know, he didn't finish. However, we all saw him signing Ferrari hats.
I think he's already pretty much
under
checked
the belt.
Out.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's, as you said, already signing Ferrari hats, you know, could be it. Just could be that energy. I do have one more question before we get to the racing summary, Jody. You have to tell us a little bit more about this assignment that you wrote too. I feel like there's a lot of like stuff we're extracting out of you today. Tell me more about that.
So I've actually brought with me what I wrote. So when I went home for Christmas, Mum got the memory boxes down. And in one of my memory boxes was this. And I found it and I could not believe it. So I'm going to read it for you. For a bit of context, I wrote this when I was 10 years old.
Adorable.
Wednesday 19th, 2008. So we don't know the month, but anyway. Formula One racing has again become one of the most spectacular and talked about sports in the world. The battle for last year's Drivers' Championship was the closest yet, so much so that in what was an epic season, almost no one missed Michael Schumacher. Lewis Hamilton gave Formula One seismic shock in 2007 and astounded everyone with his fearless driving abilities. But it was Ferrari's Kimi Raikkonen who proved the most consistent and cool-headed as he overtook Hamilton at the last race of the season to take the 2007 title. This year's season promises to be just as exciting. Dot, dot, dot.
The fact that your English accent just got so much more proper while you read that. Thing of beauty.
I think you're made for podcasting.
Do you know what? Everyone has always said I've got the voice for the podcast and the stories I have. I reckon it could go viral.
Well, there we go. Starting things from here, dot.
But you know what? Actually, again, I've always loved Lewis because I wrote that in 2008 and that was his first ever championship win that season.
That was his second year, yeah.
Yeah, and his first championship. So I wrote that knowing, clearly, I'm his lucky charm.
Oh, big call, big call. Let's talk about this week's race, the 2024 Australian Formula One Grand Prix.
This week we had a fairly eventful weekend. As always, our standard Grand Prix consists of three practice sessions, a three-part qualifier, and then the main race. Throughout our sessions this week, we had a number of flags to signify changing track conditions. These flags, which are waved physically by the marshals, are designed as a way to quickly communicate these changing conditions to the drivers out on track. We have some common flags that everyone will be familiar with, such as the checkered flag that is waved as the first driver finishes the race and continues to be waved until the last driver crosses the line. There is also a red flag, which indicates that the session has stopped, usually because of a serious accident or severe weather. We then have a yellow flag, which indicates that there is a hazard on the track and drivers are required to slow down. A single yellow flag indicates the hazard is next to or partially on the track, while double yellow indicates that the hazard may be causing a significant blockage. The yellow flags may also be accompanied by a virtual or physical safety car. You cannot overtake while yellow flags are in effect. After the red or yellow flags, we'll see a green flag, which indicates that the track is clear and that racing can begin again. Further to these main flags, we also have additional colours, such as the blue flag, which tells a driver that they are about to be lapped by a faster car. Conversely, we also have a white flag, which tells the driver that there is a slower vehicle up ahead that they may need to be cautious of. A black flag with an orange circle indicates that the car may have potential damage and they are required to return to the pits. In this case, the car can only rejoin the race once the FIA's chief scrutineer has approved it to do so. A black and white flag means the stewards have noted unsportsmanlike conduct and will be keeping an eye on a particular driver. And finally, the flag that no driver wants to see, a black flag, indicates that a driver has been disqualified and must return to the pits. The last black flag to be seen in F1 was in Canada in 2007, when both a Ferrari and a Renault driver left the pit lane while the traffic light was red during a safety car period. Both were later disqualified in what would become Hamilton's very first Grand Prix win.
Well, that's great facts. Thanks for that, Aaron.
Maybe one year, perhaps we can get a checkered flag that is full of pride.
Oh,
that'll be wonderful, won't it?
That'll be so lovely.
That'll be great. Maybe we can see that in the future.
See, I actually, in all seriousness, didn't know about the orange and black flag there.
I was actually surprised about the orange and black. Wait, yeah. The orange circle in the black flag.
Yeah.
I love the fact that there is some guy whose job is chief scrutineer.
It's a good title. Like, great for the CV. Anywho, this weekend kicked off with free practice sessions that set the tone for the competition ahead. Lando Norris, showcasing exceptional skill and precision, clocked the fastest time in FP1, hinting at a strong performance for McLaren. The momentum shifted in FP2 and FP3, with Charles Leclerc for Ferrari taking a lead, indicating the team were a very serious contender for the podium. Alongside great racing, the practice sessions also had their share of drama. Several cars found the limits of the Albert Park track, especially in the fast corners of 1, 7 and 10. Alex Albon lost control of his Williams as he rode up on the curb at turn 7, smashing into the barrier on one side of the track before bouncing over to the wall on the other side. In a strategic team decision, Williams brought Albon back for FP3 thanks to his teammate Logan Sargeant sacrificing his ride for the weekend. While this showcases true team spirit, it was a big blow for what should have been a very simple rebuild if Williams had the parts ready for that car. Qualifying was a nail-biter, with the teams like Red Bull, Ferrari and McLaren battling it out. But it was Max Verstappen and his Red Bull who clinched pole position, with Carlos Sainz and Lando Norris lining up closely behind. Sergio Perez originally secured P3, but was given a three-place grid penalty after repeating Nico Hülkenberg's qualifying lap. The session also saw Alpine finally break out of Q3, while Yuki Tsunoda's fastest lap in the RB surprisingly pushed Lewis Hamilton out of Q2. Race day was nothing short of spectacular, marked with thrilling overtakes, unexpected retirements, and a reshuffling of the pack. Carlos Sainz, fresh from surgery, made an audacious move early on to snatch the lead from Verstappen. Unfortunately for Max, the race was cut short due to a brake fault, forcing him to retire before lap 5. Lewis Hamilton's retirement due to engine trouble brought out a virtual safety car, reshaping the race dynamics and leading to fierce competition between Ferrari and McLaren at the front. Sergio Perez and the lone Red Bull fought valiantly, but could only manage 5th place. Meanwhile, both Haas drivers showcased their skill, securing points finishes in the commendable display of teamwork and strategy. In a heart-stopping moment during the last lap, George Russell had a major crash behind Fernando Alonso in his Aston Martin. At the end, George's Mercedes was lying on its side and in the middle of the racing line, which prompted the race to end with another virtual safety car. Alonso, after the race, received a 20-second penalty by the stewards for causing the collision, but we'll touch on that a little bit later. The podium saw an ecstatic Carlos Sainz take the top step, followed by his teammate Charles Leclerc, with Lando Norris finishing a strong third, while hometown hero Oscar Piastri put on a fantastic performance to finish fourth. Off track, McLaren's Zak Brown extended his contract as team principal until 2030, and in stark revelation, it was uncovered how Williams was managing its entire car operations through an Excel spreadsheet prior to this year, highlighting the need for intervention from James Vowles. Finally, F1 Academy Managing Director Susie Wolf has launched a legal action against the FIA over alleged defamation following an investigation of her carried out at the end of last year. Both Hamilton and Russell have also come out criticising the lack of transparency in F1 following the announcement of Susie's case. This all comes as the FIA Ethics Committee cleared President Mohammed bin Sulayem of alleged interference in the Jeddah and Las Vegas races during the 2023 season. So, Jody, Ferrari won 2. Right? And Sainz driver of the day. I'm personally excited, but what's your thoughts on the whole Ferrari performance of the race?
You know, I think they did amazing. I think it really shows. And, you know, everyone was saying, oh, if Max was still in it, but I don't know. I reckon Sainz would have really put up a fight against Max regardless.
I think that was reflective in the first couple of laps.
Like, absolutely. It was pushing.
A great overtake, and it wasn't in a DRS zone. It was purely just that really fast corner at, I think it's 8.
The last time, when was the last time that we saw the Ferrari 1-2?
1-2 has to be quite a while ago.
It was. I actually saw a picture of this earlier because they had the suits on with sponsored by Marlboro back when obviously the cigarettes were big in the game. That was the last Ferrari 1-2.
Fair few years on that one.
2004.
Is that when Renault was in Alonso years?
Yeah.
I thought the Ferraris were strong the entire weekend. I think strong and consistent. I think Red Bulls were troubled or plagued by a lot of different things, maybe lack of confidence in the car, something again with the reliability of Max's car there too. Ferrari pounced at the opportunity, and you saw that with Sainz taking it and Charles Leclerc not too far behind. I thought it was great.
You know, Sainz is really coming in with the attitude of he's got nothing to lose. He is fighting for a place next year. He hasn't got a seat, and it shows. He is determined.
I do love that in his post-race interview, he's like, hopefully this will get me a job next year.
Poor thing. I also love the meme, which was around Fred Vasseur going, oh, if I can win a race without an appendix, I'm now going to take out Charles Leclerc's appendix to then, you know, enable another win there too. So I did find that quite funny.
They're also talking about removing Carlos's left kidney.
Oh.
And didn't you send us something about Logan Sargeant giving Carlos his appendix?
Yeah. You know, Logan Sargeant, the sharing. Sharing is probably his...
Sharing is caring.
Sharing is caring is his mantra. But again, do you think, Jody, you wearing red may have also helped Ferrari with winning this race?
I absolutely do. And there's a quote that was said by one of our favourites, Sebastian Vettel. He said, everyone is a Ferrari fan. Even if they say they're not, they are Ferrari fans. And I think that is so true, spot on. What about you two, would you say? Even though I know, obviously, you're McLaren.
Definitely Ferrari boy from the start as a kid. And then I duality with McLaren there.
I think they've dominated for, 70-something plus years now in all forms of racing. And like you look at some of the quotes that are attributed to them from like the 50s, Ferrari sell cars just so that they can support their racing. Mm. And racing is the blood of Ferrari. So for any race driver to get into a Ferrari car is probably one of the ultimate goals.
And Ferrari is the pinnacle of motorsport.
Yeah, that's very true, really. I also, coming back to Sainz's performance, he looked strong from the start. I think maybe having DRS early, because he overtook
lap two.
So I don't think Max had enough of a pull away to kind of just get enough space between him and Carlos, which allowed him to at least quickly get up. So props to the DRS being activated early. It's probably the first time I'm actually saying that, but it really helped for Carlos getting in front and taking charge there too.
And I was worried, you know, watching his post-race interview from qualifying, Carlos looked in pain. Like, he genuinely looked in pain. And obviously, 16 days from a laparoscopic abdominal surgery, you've got to give him credit where it's due. You know, that is tough going. It must have been uncomfortable. And to come back and win, incredible.
Yeah, I think that fairy tale story there. Now, who remembers what my dad was saying about this too, right? So we're discussing about how much pain he might be in. And my dad, being a cheeky man that he is, was like, well, I had a double hernia and I had one time, it was just keyhole. The next day, I was, you know, on a ladder polishing a lamp, you know, making it sound, it was so easy. Again, crazy.
I literally took one look at him and I said, William, I said, dusting a lamp on a ladder, Formula One drive. Yeah, I don't really think you can compare the two, but he tried. He really did try.
Bless him.
He did try. He even said that he thinks that if he fell off the ladder, that'd be the same amount of G's as driving an F1 car.
My dad was on point on that entire weekend, and thanks to Jody, you extrapolated more out of that.
We got him in the car.
Yeah, you got him into that $2.5 million car.
The vintage racer.
And then Aaron had to pull him out.
For Sainz to get his win, the elephant in the room was Max not finishing. Second time in his career that he did not finish, and second time in his career that he did not finish in Australia. That was wild. The crowd screaming when that happened was insane.
But you know what? I did see some Karen on Instagram. Sorry if anyone is listening to this called Karen and is a decent person. But I saw on Instagram them going, how unsportsmanship-like, cheering when Max didn't finish. Oh, please. We're allowed a bit of excitement.
You wouldn't cheer if it was an accident that had happened to him.
Correct.
That would be shock. But he had mechanical issues. His brakes started smoking. And this is genuinely a moment of excitement for Formula One. This levels out the playing field again, because now I think Sergio is still in second place in the driver's standings, but only 4 points behind Max now. So it's really bringing up the competition in this year's season.
I think even Max said it perfectly. You know, motorsport is also a mechanical sport. It's not just the human behind the machine. And if that machine is not then performing as well as the human is, it's going to cause stuff like this. As angry as he probably was, especially he wants to win that 10 in a row, go to 11 and, you know, own every single race this year, shit happens. And we know that he's going to come back into Japan in 2 weeks' time and just own the field again. So it did spice everything up and allowed us to have that kind of moment to go, who's now going to win this? And it was very exciting.
And seeing that brake on fire was like insane. As he drove in, I saw the slow motion of him driving into the pits. It was just flames coming off that back wheel.
I remember when he had his do not finish in 2022. The difference in Max has just been wild. He got out of his car in 2022 and was hitting it with his foot, kicking the wheel, angry, annoyed. This year, he pulled up to the pits, got out and just literally said, as you said, it's a mechanical sport. It is what it is. Like the maturity.
He did have a moment. They did show him the second he got out of the car and he was like fingers to his head and mouthed something about stupid. But I think he calmed down pretty quickly after that.
Much better than kicking the car.
Better than literally last time got out and was full blown pelting the wheels last time.
I think the interesting part here, I don't know if it was because it was the third race in the season or just the Melbourne track itself, but we saw a lot of mechanical issues with these cars. And one of them was the chewing up of tyres, brakes with Max Verstappen. We saw it in the F2s and F3s. Was it just Melbourne or was it just...
Well, the commentators were saying that this year the Melbourne track is just completely different. This isn't an issue they had last year. We do make changes to the track and they make sure that things are ready for the drivers. And for 11 months of the year, it is a road. A street race is always going to have different conditions every time they race.
Yeah, I thought it was just very interesting to see a lot of this coming on through, especially with tyre management.
See, I had messages, people saying, how hot is it? It must be really hot. And it was only 21 degrees. Like, it actually wasn't a hot day for Formula One.
No, and I think track temperature was actually pretty good too. So it was just very interesting that things wanted to blow up.
We saw it through the F2s and the F3s as well, that their tyres were just being chewed up. We watched the F3s first thing in the morning on Sunday. Watching the amount of rubber that was just flying off those cars was absolutely insane.
Yeah, it made it for an interesting race. Like, Melbourne puts on the stops. Not only are we a great track close to the city and looks visually stunning across the lake, but yeah, we throw in some variables here or there that just keep the drivers guessing. Now, if we're going to be talking a little bit about Verstappen, why don't we flip this and actually talk about Mercedes?
Oh.
You know, being a Mercedes girl and loving Hamilton.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts? How are you feeling?
I mean, obviously, was not the race that Mercedes wanted at all. And Toto Wolff must clearly be beside himself. You know, two do not finishes. Not just one, two. Mm. Both of them. That is a huge hit for Mercedes, considering they've won the Constructors' Championship 8 times. For them to now be so far down, it's just heartbreaking to watch. And someone actually said to me, there needs to be an investigation into the Merck downfall. Like, what has happened? What has gone wrong? The W15 is a shit box.
Mm-hmm.
It is terrible. It's got no pace. The engine is failing.
It's come down to the fact that, unfortunately, they just got the new ground force regulations wrong and they just haven't come back from it.
No.
Red Bull, whether it's luck or skill, managed to get everything that they needed right when those new regulations came in. And Mercedes did the complete opposite and have missed out for years now because of that.
And they also lost a lot of their engineers and people that had been there for a long time who, for those 8 years, had absolutely smashed the design process.
I think that's it, really. When you're at the pinnacle of winning constantly, where do you then go inside a team? There's not going to be much movement because you want to keep people in certain spots. And then if you're doing it year after year, again, where do you go? Oh, Ferrari puts up their hand and splashes some cash, you're going to move. Same with Red Bull, same with McLaren. And we're seeing a lot of the pulling apart of Mercedes as an organization, especially with the thinking and the aero work, which has allowed teams like McLaren to come on up. I think even Ferrari has capitalized on it. I do think from a Red Bull perspective, they had a lot of that down pat pretty well when they signed on Adrian Newey. He's just a bit of a gun when it comes to aero. So, of course, when the regs change, they were going to be on top of it from the day dot.
But, you know, I also think Lewis has been saying for a few years now he's not been happy with the car. And as a seven-time world champion, if they're going to tell you there's a problem with the car, you should listen to it and take the criticism and the construction from someone who drives that car. You know, he knows what he's talking about. And I don't think he was listened to, in all honesty.
We hear that feedback. Not only from Lewis. Lewis has been quite outspoken about the fact that he understands where the car is going wrong and he tries to voice his opinions and he's not being listened to, which is probably one of the big driving forces behind him moving to Ferrari. But we hear other drivers, Daniel Ricciardo and people like Alonso, being seasoned drivers, and they say, I know where there's problems with the car. In Daniel's post-race interview, he said, well, apparently, not an industry secret, but he's got a button on his steering wheel that he can mark points in the track or mark points in the race where he said something isn't right with the car. And then they can go back with the engineers and go, okay, well, what was happening with the car at that point? Why did it not feel right? Blah, blah, blah. So these drivers know exactly what's going on. You look at just how quickly they, while out on track, go, okay, there's something with the back left wheel, or it's not handling the way it's supposed to in this particular corner, or I just don't have speed in the straight, I don't have downforce. They know, sitting in the car, exactly what feelings are causing what failures.
I wonder what that button's called. Is it just, oh, fuck me, this is stupid, like this is not working button?
I have that button on my keyboard here. I can mark points in our recording where Sean has said something dumb.
Yeah, well, there we go. You know, maybe it should be named the exact same thing.
Obviously, Lewis's retirement was due to mechanical issues and his engine shut down halfway through the race. It was a fairly uneventful thing, but he did need to be removed from the track and caused. Was it a virtual safety car?
It was a virtual safety car, but you saying that he's been removed from the track makes you have an image that he's got bouncers getting like taken away.
They're called marshals. Contrast to the other DNF for Mercedes, Russell, he crashed in spectacular fashion. Coming out of turn six and into turn seven, he lost control of the car, got himself into the kitty litter, smashed so hard into the wall. And as he came back out on track, the car fell over itself and onto its front wheels so that he was literally diagonal and sitting in the middle of the track. That was probably one of the biggest crashes we've seen in a while.
Yeah, that and Albon's crash I thought were pretty spectacular in terms of, I think, the shock of it all.
He clearly sounded distressed and terrified, and I think that probably brought back a few memories from when they lost their friend in Formula 2, Hubert, who was also in the middle of the track and subsequently died from the fatality of the crash. And you can hear the panic in his voice, you know, red flag, I'm in the middle of the fucking track, red flag. He was terrified, and it must have just been a bit of a shock, I think. I don't think, you know, on your last lap, you expect to lose control of the car and crash out after a pretty steady race.
Even as safe as these cars are, like they're so light years ahead compared to maybe 20, 30 years ago, to be at that wrong moment, wrong time, and the safety car not coming out quick enough or not being called a red flag could be disaster for someone. I think the interesting part has come out of that crash. I think we all were thinking when we were watching the replay of it, going, George doing maybe a bit of a George and overstepping. But what's come out of it has been the fact on maybe Alonso playing around with how he was braking to change George's behavior and hopefully putting him back even further.
Yeah, so Alonso came out saying that he was trying something different.
Quotation marks. Doing a different racing line.
He was going to try and brake earlier to get a better exit from turn six. The data shows that he did do that. However, it looks as though he broke too early and then had to correct and accelerate again before he reached turn six. So he ended up braking twice leading into that turn six, which is why the stewards have now gone, no, you get a 20-second penalty because you made a mistake. The interesting thing that we saw was the conversation around he got a 20-second penalty for that because the stewards are focused on the action, not the result. That's what they've come out and said, that their focus is on the action. His action was something that in normal racing is not allowed, but the fact that Russell then crashed as a direct result of that is not reflective of the punishment that he received. Only the action taken was.
Do we call this racing? I think if you take the crash aside, because I think that is the big, should not have occurred, that was the stressful part. Defensive driving is defensive driving, and sometimes it is a tactic to be on how do I psych out the individual enough for them to take, you know, oh, that's happening. I'm now having to push back maybe 2 seconds instead of the one for getting DRS and hopefully getting that overtake in the next corner. Like, is it right to do this? Is it not?
And I also think, you know, racing is all about the competition and being competitive and taking those risks. For the past few races, we've seen everybody playing it a little bit safe. You know, there's less of a budget with cars, that sort of thing. People don't want to do the damage, but it's not as exciting. You know, we want to see those nose-to-nose overtakes, close corners. Obviously, none of us want to see crashes and people hurt and problems, but it's excitement on the track when you see people go head-to-head. And I think, you know, especially for Mercedes, I think, you know, George was pushing the car and doing his best to gain a place. He'd lost Lewis. They needed more points. And I think it was a risk. And obviously with Alonso testing the brakes, it was just a very unfortunate racing incident.
Yes, incident indeed. With Alonso going down 20 seconds, Aston Martin did a pretty good job for the weekend, right? Like, he was still in the points.
It ended up only costing them 2 points. Alonso losing, I think, 3 positions by the 20-second penalty also put Stroll up a position. So
did he get Alonso's position?
I don't think he got Alonso's position, but Alonso lost 4 points and Stroll then gained 2 points. So net, they only lost 2 points.
Which, again, it's just, it goes back to Mercedes, you know, a double DNF, an opportunity for points. Should George have even tried to go that hard, right? Especially because this is the final lap. I know, again, we want racing. We want to go and see this. But do you go, well, points are points? I may have not gotten Alonso now for the last 10 laps. Do I just save this?
For that 1 point difference, would it have been worth just hanging back?
But then maybe that's why you're not been a racing driver. You know, because you're wanting just to do as much as you can and get to that last moment and attack. Let's talk about McLaren. Great, great opportunity. They took it. They ran with it. What's your thoughts on swapping Lando and Oscar?
Yes, it was really hard to watch it being Oscar's home race. But as Oscar said at the end of the race, he didn't have the pace. Norris did. Leclerc was pulling away from Oscar and Norris was catching him. So he knew that at a certain point, Norris was going to overtake him anyway. So conceding the place to Norris was what needed to happen. And you look at the results at the end of the race, Oscar was really quite far behind in fourth position. He, I think, ended up being something like an extra 15 seconds behind Lando, who was up there chasing the Ferraris to the end.
Again, being an Aussie boy, you would have wanted to see him on the podium, so it was a bit hard to swallow. But again, I think the maturity of Oscar just keeps on shining through on how much of a team player, but also on how much a gun he is behind that car. Like, it is always exciting to see him on track.
And his time will come.
Yeah.
I'm a big believer in his time is coming.
He's only young. He's got years ahead of him, as does Lando. This isn't the first opportunity he's going to have to get podium or a win in Melbourne.
I do still want him to be winning and in front of Lando. I've got a bet on this. Well, it's part of my predictions, so I need him to do better. But I'm also very happy for him to get that fourth place, well-deserved. Shall we talk a little bit about the Racing Bulls? Tsunoda.
Yuki.
Yeah, did very well. He managed to do really well in qualifying. He got into Q3.
He got to Q3. He got points.
Yeah.
He removed Hamilton from Q3.
Oh my gosh, he did so well.
Yeah.
And you can't not love Yuki. He is just, what a personality.
The little angry pocket rocket.
And you know,
just like you.
Exactly. Do you remember when they asked every driver what their dream was and everyone was win a world championship? And Yuki's was to open a restaurant.
Aww.
He's just adorable.
I saw a reel a couple of weeks ago that was like, all the drivers, if they were short and it had all of the like full-size drivers' heads on tiny little bodies, and then they just showed Yuki as he was.
So Yuki did well. But let's look at Daniel Ricciardo.
He did better. I think he started at 18th, he finished at 12th.
And when his lap time was deleted, though?
He did. In qualifying, he had that lap time deleted. Like, he got himself up into 12th position and then had the lap time deleted and dropped back down to 18th. So he should have done better in qualifying. And in the race, he did well. Like, he did a much better showing than he has the last couple of weeks.
I think it's very telling in the race interviews on how disappointed he is in himself. I think he is lost for confidence. I think also there's going to be a lot more pressure as the season unfolds for him to be doing well. Do you think he would get the boot mid-year, like all other drivers similar in that seat?
No.
Why is that?
I think Christian Horner absolutely adores Danny Ric.
But performance is performance.
He's always protected Danny Ric. When he said he was leaving for Renault, it broke Christian Horner's heart. You could see it written all over his face. And I think if there was potentially any other reserve driver, they might have kept Nick De Vries on for a bit longer. But because it was Danny Ric in the reserves, I think they pushed for it sooner. I think he's pretty safe.
He needs to form. He needs to do some form, though. Like, I'm not impressed.
Would you agree with that with Horner?
I 100% agree. Yeah. He's going to be given the length of rope that he needs, and they're going to keep extending it. I think if he still at the end of the season is not performing, they'll have a lot of questions that they have to answer. But I don't think that they will unceremoniously dump him at mid-season. I think they'll give him more than enough chances. It could be that he comes good. Like I said, this was a much better showing this week than it was previous weeks. The interesting thing will be that our next race is in Japan, which is Yuki's home race. So Yuki's going to have a lot of pressure on him to perform from the crowd, not only from the team. And so if Yuki does bring it, Daniel has to try and match that energy as well.
And I do have one question for you both before we move on from Aussie drivers. What were your thoughts on the third Aussie driver racing this year? Valtteri. What do we think of his performance?
Look, you know what? Kick as a team did absolutely nothing this race. They turned up to the track and they may as well have stayed in the pits because no one noticed that they were there.
Funnily enough, it was their pit stops that really set them behind in that race.
That was the same as last week. They're just not performing well in races.
Sloppy.
That being said, the Uber Eats Valtteri Bottas marketing
car share.
Uber car share.
That teal color and Bottas with his little mullet thing is just now etched in my brain.
Every piece of marketing that Bottas put out the last couple of weeks is just a thing of beauty. And even to see at one point, Kik just started doing reels of Zhou in a blonde wig with fake moustache pretending to be Valtteri. And I'm like, this is just marketing gold. They have done so well at putting the two drivers out there. Considering for the last few years, no one's really thought anything much of Zhou because he's been very quiet. Kik are really going, no, we're going to put you front and center. We're going to make sure that people see you. We're going to make sure that people see Valtteri. We're going to make sure that people love you both. So I think the marketing wise, they're just.
I just think it was hilarious when you've got Danny Rick on the board, of course, and Oscar. And then in the middle of those two is Valtteri.
Yeah, as a marketing, as an ad. Yeah, I thought that was quite funny.
Yeah, all of the promotional materials around Melbourne were Oscar, Daniel, Valtteri. And then for some reason, whenever they needed a fourth, Leclerc.
Yeah, Ferrari, you know, you always need to have a Ferrari on there.
I mean, he is just gorgeous though. Let's not beat him around the bush.
I agree. He's one sexy
man.
Oh,
stunning.
On the flip side, fantastic performance for Haas.
Two drivers in the points. That's amazing for them.
First time since Jeddah.
Oh, wait, last week? No,
years.
Yeah. Like if we're thinking about those teams of like RB, Kick, Sauber, Haas and Williams, they're doing very well.
We're not including Alpine in that. They're in a league of their own at the bottom. I think we need to forget about Alpine,
to be honest. We're not even going to talk about them even today, right? Except maybe they did very, okay.
Ocon did very well in qualifying. He got himself into Q2, which as far as Alpine's concerned, that's winning a Grand Prix at the moment.
Yeah.
But Gasly finished ahead of Ocon. So I don't know what happened with Ocon's race. I haven't looked into it too much, but the person who qualified higher, he dropped down.
Yeah. But again, I think Haas capitalizing on everything that happened during the race there too, they looked very good. I think the teamwork in that team, especially from previous people that did not like one another, you know, in their youth, now I think they're pretty good. And Gunther at the talk was saying on how well they are organized and buddy with that. So they did fantastically well. I'm excited for them.
We're watching the race highlight last night. The two drivers, like there was just an entire section of montages of Haas overtakes because they just did it so well during the race.
I miss Gunther. I miss him. A highlight for me was seeing him in the post-race interviews, just hearing his voice and going, is that Gunther? Oh my gosh, there he is.
Well, he was supposedly doing the Channel 10, which is our local broadcaster here in Melbourne, of the Grand Prix. So he was doing some interviews and stuff. So again, when Aussies latch onto something like Valtteri Bottas being a bogan and Gunther, because of his candid FU nature, latched on, gave them support that they needed.
We love that.
We do love that. And I think finally, shall we talk about Williams?
That was hard. Like,
what would you have done? I want to know each thought here.
I think they made the right decision to put Alex in the car. I think had Alex finished in the points, that would have been a really big kick in the guts to Logan. I think just the fact that he didn't gives some semblance of, you know what, I made the sacrifice, I made the right decision, but it didn't come back to bite me. So that's a small win for him in this circumstance, but it would have been hard to accept that decision.
Jodie?
I think personally, Albon should not have raced. I know he is the better driver if we're talking statistics, but I don't think Williams are high up enough in fighting for a constructors that it makes a difference if they got 1 point here and there. I think at the end of the day, Albon took a risk. He crashed, fine, but I don't think Logan should have had it taken away.
Alpine are doing quite badly, so there is a chance for them to get just a single point could get them up to ninth. That's $10 million.
Yeah, that is true.
I think if you're looking at it overall for the season, you need to capitalize on as much as you can. But I think being one car down in 2024 is limiting. We saw, what was it, in Jeddah on how they used the Haas cars to create more space, right? So to fight for one potential point in the race, you need to have both cars on there from a strategic point of view.
Yeah, we're seeing teammates actually needing to be teammates a lot this year. You saw the call to swap the McLaren drivers. You're seeing team orders happening for Ferrari. You're seeing team orders happen for Haas. So to be one car down in the race is a significant disadvantage for a team, not only from a points perspective, but from a strategy perspective.
I think Albon extracted as much as he could out of the car. I think this comes back to the point we made about running in an Excel spreadsheet. Williams have had, over the winter break, transformed on how the racing team runs, which has then set them really far behind in terms of having parts, getting that car out on track for those practice sessions.
They were managing their entire car through Excel. Because of that, they cut a lot of corners to make their car simpler for the last few years. So back in like 2019, 2020, they were running with cars that had less parts so that they could keep track of things because everything was in an Excel spreadsheet. They were also talking about the fact that because everything was managed in an Excel spreadsheet, they didn't know where anything was. They didn't know how long it was going to take to get there. They didn't know how many of a certain thing actually physically existed, to the point that their team had to work overtime and pull all-nighters just for the extra man hours required to keep things going. They cut corners with their cars by replacing carbon fiber parts with pieces of metal, which made their car heavier. This year, they have gone, you know what, we're gonna bite the bullet. We're going to make all of these process changes. We're going to do everything that we can possibly do right. It's going to be really fucking difficult for us to do that. It's going to be really painful. We're going to have a really horrible year. But it's better to rip the Band-Aid off now than spend the next 4 years struggling to correct these processes. Let's just 2024, fix it all, and then 2025, start off right.
For me, I think the team failed the drivers, right? Not having the parts for that chassis earlier. I think they said that they were going to have that chassis available in Japan. You know, Melbourne's going to be a very complicated, if not crashy circuit, coining that as a term, crashy. You want to make sure you've got that support, which was having the parts there. And I think the team failed them, which resulted in having to now be strategic and data-led on giving Albon Logan's seat. But I think there was a lot of confidence on not only you zapping it away from Logan, but there's now a lot of pressure on Albon to secure 10th at minimum to make this work. It's very tough.
You know, happy birthday, Albon. Here's Logan Sargeant's car.
Yeah.
I did love that comment. It's like, that was free practice 3. They're like, it is Alex Albon's birthday and his gift this year is a brand new car.
Do you know what? Don't we just love the commentators, the sass? They are brutal and I'm here for it.
I'm constantly in awe, like watching, for example, even just the start of some of the races and listening to Crofty just effortlessly talk about the track and talk about where everyone has qualified and go through and just the way he speaks. And I'm like, we write such a big script just to do this podcast. And he just off the cuff just sounds brilliant. And some of the lines, as you said, some of the lines that they come out with, amazing.
You know what? Silence. Let's move to our tops and bottoms of the week. Aaron, I'm going to start with you.
My top and bottom this week are Williams for different reasons. Or rather, my top is James Vowles. As I mentioned, he's made the really tough decision to put the team through a lot of pain this year to completely fix all their processes and get themselves to a position where they're doing things correctly. As someone who has worked in process and change management, I know that that's a difficult job to do and it's a difficult decision to make. So I think props to him for making that decision, getting Williams to be the team that it needs to be competitive in 2025, even if it means hurting their 2024 season. My bottom is the fact that they were using Excel in the first place. Like, that is the bane of my existence when someone manages an entire process in Excel. Like, Excel is an amazingly powerful tool for data analysis. It is not meant to track processes and things like that. So the fact that they were running an entire Formula One car or two Formula One cars in an Excel spreadsheet to the detriment of their staff, to the detriment of their drivers, to the detriment of their performance in the Constructors' Championship, I just think disappointing.
I hope Microsoft hears this and actually goes and sponsor them as an Office 360 product. Like, that would be freaking hilarious on their car. Bring back Clippy.
I mean, it would be a great, I think it would look great.
Clippy instead of the Duracell battery.
Yeah. Jodie, what's your tops and bottoms?
So my top for the week, we've already touched on it, but I think Haas deserve a huge pat on the back for having both drivers in the points. I think they raced incredibly well. So that's my top. My bottom, and I hate to say this, it breaks my heart, but my bottom is Mercedes. The double do not finish. I can't back them this race, no matter how much I tried. And my good friend back in the UK, Shane Phelan, he messaged me. He got up to watch the race at 4 a.m. dedication. But I mean, we do it, so it's the least they can do.
Payback.
Yeah, the one race of the year that that's on the other side of the world.
Oh, shock.
But he sent me a message regarding Lewis's engine failure. And he said that essentially he felt that it was Dell Windows shut down.
Sounds like that, right?
Watching an old computer Dell shut down was Lewis Hamilton's W15 car engine failure. And that was beautifully done.
Oh, Sean. Thank you. Thank you. I'm basically a noise box.
I'm not touching that one.
Yeah, squeak. Squeak it. Squeak it.
All right. Moving on. Sean, who are your top and bottom of the week?
Carlos Sainz, because I want to top him, but also... For the fact that...
Now, haven't you heard if you need Carlos Sainz to not be attractive, you just have to imagine him with a bald head?
Don't ruin him for me.
Someone messaged Charles Leclerc going, my wife loves Carlos Sainz. How do I stop her being attracted to him? And Charles is like, imagine him with a shaved head.
I think you could pull it off.
No, he looks insane.
I need to find these photos, but anyway. Yeah, appendix removal. Not having a secured seat at Ferrari and being the only driver to defeat Max over the past 2 years. Wow. What a brilliant race driver. I hope that, you know, Red Bull picks him up.
There was talks about that this morning, actually.
Mercedes, I don't know. I think Mercedes is a step backwards. I it's sad, but I think this is also a good thing for him because he's now shackled away from the number one Leclerc.
Do you think he'll ever be number one for a team?
I hope so, because there is so much.
He'd be number one in the midfield.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I feel like he's strong enough and experienced enough now to be number one even in a top team. But anyway, like that's...
Maybe with a rookie.
Yeah.
No need to ask. He's a smooth operator.
Smooth operator. All right. And my bottom of the week is going to be Daniel Ricciardo. I think so much hope and dream, and I think him coming back last year, even if it was like a couple of races, it just gave us something, and hopefully we're going to see that old Daniel Ricciardo come back, especially being in a sister Red Bull team. But I'm not seeing it. I don't know if it's a mental thing for him, if it's the car. I'm seeing excuses. I'm seeing a lack of confidence. So yeah, I'm just disappointed. Alrighty, loves, thank you so much for another fantastic episode, and especially to you, Jodie, for another memorable and amazing Australian Grand Prix. I'm sure my dad is ready to adopt you by now.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. I've enjoyed myself.
Yee. As always, it's our last lap, so we've got one final question for you. What are you most looking forward to for the rest of the F1 season?
Oh, I'm hoping that this is the start of potential mechanical problems for Red Bull and that we can see more exciting races, you know, moving forward. I think we've got some really promising drivers on the grid. Yuki is doing amazing. I'm excited to see what his season brings. I think I'm just going to have to give up on Lewis this season. He's checked out. I'm going to check out with him. Let's see you know, what those midfield teams are going to bring for us this year.
Yeah, and maybe more red in the wardrobe.
I reckon so. I think it's my new colour.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jodie, I can't wait to bring you back to celebrate the British Grand Prix later on this year. But again, thank you so much for joining the Let's Talk family.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So next week, we have another break as the teams head up into Asia for the Japanese Grand Prix at Suzuka in a little over a week's time, which, as I mentioned, is Yuki's home race. Melbourne has given the season a bit of a shake-up, so let's see if Japan can follow suit.
Here's hoping we can continue to see some fantastic competition as this year shapes up. Anyway, I'm sure our ramblings today have convinced you to subscribe to Let's Talk wherever you get your favourite podcasts. And I'm even more sure that you want to leave us a glowing 5-star rating while you're there.
And don't forget to head on over to social media and follow us at Let's Talk Show. If you're a fabulous F1 fan, we want to hear from you. So share a comment or slide into our DMs.
Ooh, slide in those DMs. Anyway, that's all from us today. Thanks for tuning in to each and every episode. And we'll catch you next time on Let's Talk.
Let's Talk is hosted, produced, and edited by Sean Polidano and Aaron Best. Our show is an entertainment podcast, and the views expressed by the host and guests are meant for entertainment purposes only. Let's Talk is recorded in Paran in Naarm, Melbourne, and we would like to acknowledge the Burrurung people of the East Kulin Nation, the traditional owners of the land, and pay our respects to Aboriginal elders, past, present, and emerging.